From the Lend to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 11th day of December 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson. He's a TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing, right here in Champaign County, Illinois. And then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast as we close out our time together by having a discussion with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Along the way, I'll bring you up to speed on some agricultural news for the afternoon, all on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like to listen to us at willag.org. That's willag.org, where today you may still sign up for Friday's Farm Assets Conference, along with the IFAS or Illinois Farm Economics Series next week in Mount Vernon, East Peoria, and DeKalb.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $4.48 and a quarter. That was 0.75 cents lower. The May at $4.55 and a half, up a quarter. Next year's December, 2 1/4 higher at $4.44. January beans, $9.95 and a half, 0.75 cents higher. The March contract at $10.02 and 0.75 cents, up 2 1/2. And November soybeans, $10.14 and a half, up 4 3/4 for the day. Bean meal, 90 cents lower. The bean oil, down 28 cents. Wheat futures, soft red at 5.63 1/4 in the March, up 1 1/2. The hard red March at 5.67 1/4, 1 1/2 higher as well. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $2.35 higher. Feeders up $1.72 1/2, and lean hogs were down $2 for the day. Crude oil, $1.80 higher, and gasoline up 3 2/10 cents. Greg Johnson from TotalGrainMarketing.com. That's TGM, the elevator right here in Champaign County, now joins us. Hi, Greg. Thanks for being with us today.
Good to be with you, Todd.
Have you picked up in farmer sales the last few days or not? I know the markets for at least corn have been better.
Yes, yes. We were extremely busy yesterday. We had a USDA monthly supply and demand report, so there was some interest in that. And with the government raising exports 150 million bushels and raising ethanol usage 50 million bushels and all that going to the bottom line, cutting carryout by 200 million bushels. We had a nice little rally in the corn market, and we were hitting some cash prices yesterday and today that we haven't seen since the middle of June. So farmers have been taking advantage of this and getting some corn sold on this rally.
Low prices cure low prices, apparently, though I'm not sure what I would call a low price at this point. We'll have to talk about that. What are your cash bids, just offhand, that pushed yesterday farmers to make some sales?
We're paying $4.40, and the harvest we started at $3.75. So that's 65 cents higher than where the price was the first day of harvest. And, of course, the futures have gone up about 30 cents and the basis has improved 35 cents. That's how we came up with the 65 cent better cash price. So a combination of basis improvement and the board has got us, 65 cents higher than where we were to start harvest, and almost a dollar higher than where we were on August 26, when we were paying less than $3.50 for corn. So the corn market has had a nice rally, futures and basis. Soybeans, on the other hand, what can you say? They're just stuck in the mud. We were $9.80 on September 1st, and we're $9.90 today. So we've gone up 10 cents in the cash bid, but that's all basis and then some. The basis has improved 30 cents. Since the first of harvest, and the futures have gone down 20 cents since the first of harvest. So the net cash price is up 10, but the futures market has not participated in any of that at all. It's been all basis on the beans.
Still looking at a very good bean crop that is in the middle of the summer season now in South America, I suppose, is putting pressure on the market. Are there other items that are pressuring the market too?
Yeah, it's just a little too soon. The pod filling and pod setting stage in South America for the most part is January and February. So we're just, the beans are just at that point in the growing season where it's hard to come up with a problem with them. If it doesn't rain, the beans don't really need a lot of rain at this point, but they have been getting rain, and so rain is always welcome down there. So it's not the critical time yet, and so the market isn't putting much of a weather premium in those South American beans yet. And then, of course, you've always got the overhanging this whole thing, potential trade problems next year with China once the Trump administration comes into play, and, you know, whether the tariffs come to be or whether that's just a ploy to try to negotiate something better. You know, we'll have to wait and see. But that certainly is concerning to some of the market participants.
When you look out through the end of the year, after farmers have evened themselves up, taken care of sales that they might need to do by December 31st, what do you see in January, other than the USDA reports that come on the 10th of the month?
Well, the acreage number is, we still want to keep that in mind, even though we won't get a number till March 31. Let's just assume that this corn rally is buying some corn acres, and we might plant 92.5 to 93 million acres of corn next year. That would be a 15.3 billion bushel corn crop, and demand is about 15 to 15.1. So we will add to the carryout with a normal crop next year if we plant 93 million acres of corn. Even with the better export numbers that we're seeing, we're up to 2.475 billion bushels of exports. That's the highest since 2021. The all-time export record is 2.747. So we're only 300 million bushels away from the best we've ever had. And that was when China participated and bought a lot of corn. So I don't know that we can expect a whole lot more of an increase from the export side of the market or the ethanol side of the market. And feed usage continues to be relatively flat. So it's all going to boil down to weather. But if we plant 93 million acres of corn, farmers probably want to take advantage of this rally between now and planting time. See if we can get some both old crop and new crop corn sold.
Yeah, so when you look out at this point, and let's deal with old crop, does it tell a producer that they can hold and make money further out, or is it saying go ahead and make sales now?
Yeah, the carry has really come out of the market. The farmers have been extremely tight holders of corn once again. Now, last year that didn't work. This year so far it has worked to be a tight holder of corn. But at some point in time, farmers will want to sell. But because the farmers haven't been selling much corn up until the last day or two, the basis has had to do most of the work. And so we've taken the carry out of the market. There was some huge carries, 25, 30 cents carry before harvest and during harvest. And now you're looking at 5, maybe 10 cents over the next 6 to 7 months. So that's not going to cover interest at all. So the market is telling elevators and farmers that we want your corn sooner rather than later. And we'll wait and see whether that actually happens or not. But that's what the market is trying to encourage farmers to do.
And so the market really has been consistent. It said at harvest, go ahead and hold it. We don't want it all now, and we'll pay you to do that. And now it's saying, all right, we're ready for it, right?
Exactly. And the farmers are saying, we just put it in the bins a month and a half ago. We're not going to pull it right back out. But maybe that's what we should be doing, is pulling it right back out after only being in the bins a month and a half, because the carry is certainly not telling you to hold on to it. And unless you think futures are going to go higher, and we could see futures go a little bit higher. I mean, this report caught a lot of traders on the wrong side. Most people thought it was going to stay at about a 1.9 billion carryout, and 1.7 obviously is tighter than where we were. That's about an 11% stocks to use ratio. We were approaching 14-15% stocks to use ratio. So 11 is not extremely tight, but it's certainly not burdensome either. And so it kind of all boils down to, you know, do the funds continue to add to their long position, or do the farmers sell into this rally? I guess that's the dichotomy that we're waiting to see how that plays out.
You've used the phrase stuck in the mud for soybeans. Will that dry out and give them some footing, or does it stay wet and things get deeper?
Well, if it's going to get better, it's probably going to be in January, February, when we have potential weather issues, that critical pod filling, pod setting stage down in South America. Today, there's really no reason for beans to be much higher than $10. We get close and farmer selling starts to limit the move as we get close to 10, and the funds are still very short beans. They have not just, you know, they just don't see any reason to cover their short positions in beans. And so a lack of fund buying and farmer selling at $10, and that's kept a lid on us, and we've been stuck in this 50-cent range for probably 4 to 5 months now.
Anything else before I let you go for the day?
No, I just think that export number is huge. I mean, that caught people by surprise, and I just don't think we want to expect the exports to continue to go higher. I mean, that number is probably legitimate, but I don't know that it needs to increase a whole lot more. So just keep that in mind. I mean, we've had a nice rally, but at some point in time, we will want to, reward this market and sell into it.
150 million bushels in a single month change from the World Ag Supply and Demand Estimate is a big number change. They're usually not that quick. The 50 million bushel change in ethanol production was fairly large too, I believe.
Yes. And that was not expected either. But 50 million, like you say, is one thing. 150 million, that's a huge. I mean, I'd have to go back and look and see when the last time the government raised exports by 150 million bushels in a month. It's been quite a few years, I'm sure.
Hey, thanks much. We appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM, TotalGrainMarketing.com, part of the Elevator System. His elevator, of course, right here in Champaign County. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Do visit our website, willag.org, willag.org. There you can listen to our programming on demand anytime you'd like. The Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, and the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast are all in the podcast section. Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, and the Opening Market Report are on the homepage, and you'll also find there information from the agricultural economist, the crop scientist, and the animal scientist from the University of Illinois. In today's agricultural news, there's still a great deal of uncertainty swirling around SAF, sustainable aviation fuel, UCO, and renewable diesel. UCO stands for used cooking oil that has been flooding into the United States, particularly from China, though that has slowed down in recent weeks. Mac Marshall, the principal at Balcony View Consulting, says there are a series of ways that the United States government could block in the future, along with tariffs, incoming used cooking oil from other parts of the world.
I think there's a couple different approaches. You know, one, through AFIS, Animal Plant Health and Inspection Service, like there's a need for certainly validating the used cooking oil that actually comes into the country. You know, there's a potential that could be, primarily something else like palm oil. I mentioned Indonesia and Malaysia as, two new trade flows we have here. There's a little smoke and fire, smoke there for me when you think about those origins and you think about the fact that it's coming in as used cooking oil. So, there's definitely an enforcement mechanism that I think, needs to be adopted, including testing. But, in terms of tariffs and everything, with a lot of this coming in from China, I think that's a very natural question of, can we stop the flow of that through, some of the tariffs that are getting promised.
Used cooking oil has been coming into the United States to create renewable diesel and, to some extent, sustainable aviation fuel. This has offset the potential for soybeans and the vegetable oil produced from it to be the primary feedstocks for those fuels. Marshall is concerned that President Trump, in his second term, will use tariffs to block that flow.
Tariffs do scare me, frankly, in terms of what it means for, taking up inflation within the United States. The consumer is the one who's effectively paying for that. Let's not disregard that. That's challenging. And more than anything, I'm scared about reciprocity. We saw this before, and more uncertainty is not something the farm economy needs right now.
Mac Marshall is with Balcony View Consulting. Let's stay with President Trump and his second term. A new Congress with a unified party control could be the ticket for a new farm bill, says the senior senator from Iowa. Chuck Grassley says at least this year, hardline GOP budget hawks in the House had an excuse not to give the speaker the votes he needed to bring up and pass a committee-approved farm bill.
I think that people in the House could hold out this year because there's no chance of getting through the Senate, so why give in?
But Grassley argues next year will be different.
Now that we have a Senate majority that'll produce a bill, that'll put a new wrinkle in the House Republicans delivering on theirs.
Grassley says there may be another incentive for party unity and not just on the farm bill.
And it isn't just this farm bill. When you only have three or four extra votes in the House, Republicans stick together or they fall, and they'll never be in the majority in 27 or 28.
House Democrat leader Hakeem Jeffries told reporters recently that any new five-year farm bill will again demand bipartisanship. Jeffries vowed his party will, by necessity, be engaged, since he argued the incoming House GOP majority will not be able to do much without us. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. On Wednesdays, we always check in with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to see how things are in the growing regions across the planet. Hi, Drew. Thanks for being with us again.
Yeah, Todd. Yeah, I think I'm just going to go on vacation for a couple of weeks here. You know, there's not much going on in the world of weather.
Well, let's see if we can detail what that looks like. Not much going on in the world. There is one hot spot you told me about. I feel like it ought to be warm there anyway. North Africa. We don't talk about it very much, but they do have a wheat crop.
That's right. Pretty big durum wheat production area there. Morocco, Algeria, and Tunisia. Parts of Morocco have been fighting drought for probably 3 to maybe 4 years, and the water supply in parts of Morocco has been so poor the past 2 years that they couldn't plant their irrigated crop. So we're on that same road again. They had a lot of moisture in October, but that was before the planting season, and it hasn't rained since, and it's been really dry there, and the next 2 weeks are going to continue to be dry. Parts of northwestern Algeria are involved with this, too. The only place where it's been raining in northwest Africa in any of the small grain production area is in north central and northeastern parts of Algeria near the coast, away from the interior crop areas. And it's just not very good scenario for a lot of these. Now, in the irrigated fields, they're probably planting okay. So I don't want to make it sound like it's total loss there. That's not the case, but there is a fair amount of crop that is not irrigated, and it does need a drink of water, and we don't see it for the next 2 weeks. So normal planting does extend into January sometimes because of this problem. So there's still a little time here where we can do better, but boy, it still looks pretty boring for the next couple of weeks there.
Move southwest across the African continent, the Atlantic Ocean, and into South America. Are things good in that continent?
Yes, they are for the most part. You know, we just had some flooding rain this past weekend in Paraná, Brazil, and neighboring areas of Paraguay and also Santa Catarina. There was some places that had more than 10 inches of rain over the weekend. So it was pretty significant. And the river and streams did get up into what they call their warning category, but they did not show it as what they call danger. I can't imagine how you can get 10 inches of rain in western Paraná and not have some standing water in a lot of fields. So I think that there has been some flooding there. It is a little bit of an issue. Their soil is sandy, though, and it will take the moisture as time moves along. And we've had 2 days of drying already. We've got another one coming up tomorrow. And then a little bit of light rain will occur Friday into Saturday, and then they'll see some more days of drying. So I don't think this is much of a big issue. Certainly wasn't welcome and not ideal. But the rest of Brazil is getting routinely occurring rainfall and still just pumping the crop along in a really favorable manner. A little bit later in this month, we may see Rio Grande do Sul dry down a little bit, and that actually will bleed back over the border to the west into eastern Argentina and neighboring areas of Uruguay. They'll probably see the ground firm up a little bit, but this is far from a crisis. And a lot of folks are trying to link this into the developing La Nina-like conditions, but it's not going to be anything close to what occurred in 2020 through 2023. It's just not going to be a nationwide problem with dryness. So the best that we can come up with for a market, for some kind of market support, would be that maybe parts of Argentina might get a little dry later this month into January. But I, at this point, wouldn't put any money down on any kind of big market move based on that. And Brazil still looks like it'll be in pretty good shape, with the exception maybe of parts of Rio Grande do Sul into that same time period.
Coming here to the United States, what does the weather forecast look for us?
You know, we are stuck in a rut right now. The pattern is going to support frequent occurrences of weather systems moving through the heart of the Midwest and on into the eastern part of the country. So central and eastern Midwestern locations, portions of the Delta, the Tennessee River Basin, and the middle and North Atlantic coastal regions will be the areas that see a relatively high frequency of rain with a little bit of snow up in the far northern part of that region. And that'll be ongoing through the next couple of weeks. The plains will be relatively dry biased, but you know, with all the moisture we had last month in hard red winter wheat country, the crop is dormant and in good shape. In fact, most of our wheat in this country is dormant or semi-dormant right now, and so there's not a whole lot of crop interest in moisture, so I think we're sitting pretty good for most areas. The Pacific Northwest is an area that we'll keep an eye on for a while. The water supply in the Yakima Valley in Washington and northern Oregon is pretty poor. There's been a lot of moisture in the Cascade Mountains. That should help down the road to improve the water supply. But the Pacific Northwest hasn't done real well. Moisture and some of the wheat up that way may not be as well established as it should be. But that doesn't make a market move in a significant manner, not right now at least.
A couple of other places in the Northern Hemisphere we should check in on, though it is the winter months, China and Russia.
Yeah, China, you know, just about ideal establishment for both wheat and rapeseed over the past few weeks. And the crop is poised to do well. We are now moving into dormancy for the wheat crop there. Rapeseed is still establishing in some pockets. Now, parts of East Central China have dried out a little bit, but because the crops have established under mostly favorable conditions, this shouldn't be an issue unless we keep the dryness in place when we get to February and March, when the rapeseed crop becomes more awake and starts some aggressive development. So we've got a few weeks here where there's time for precipitation to occur. In Russia, you know, the biggest issue that's been ongoing there forever seems to be that drier bias from eastern Ukraine into Russia's southern region of western Kazakhstan. The crops there are all dormant now. They went dormant without being established very well, and there is certainly a high risk of winter kill this year. Our first opportunity for cold in that region will arrive on Friday, I guess it is, going into the weekend. And temperatures may come close to the damage threshold, but they're not likely to go below it. And there's going to be a little bit of light snow that's going to precede the event. So I can't get excited about this one and only event threatening the crop there. What we do see happening is a little moisture in the form of rain and snow is occurring periodically in that part of the world and will probably continue into the winter. So we will probably come to spring with a little more moisture in the ground. So if we don't lose the crop that's poorly established in that part of the world, it will have a fair chance of recovering at least partially because of improved moisture in the spring.
Thank you much for the tour across the planet.
You bet. Have a great day and a good week.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason.